What's up, everybody? Welcome on into our Thursday at the Treasure Chest Casino here at 4540 Williams Boulevard in Kenner. We are in the back of the casino, folks, at the Game Bar and Grill. Man, oh man, I'm becoming a wings connoisseur here. Last week I got the lemon pepper, this week the garlic parm, and they have been phenomenal again, Mike.
Awesome. I got the cheeseburger.
Cheeseburger.
Yeah, but I got to get something different from y'all, just like Bob last week. No, I don't want nothing to eat, and then he's eating out of both your plate and mine. So he thought the wings were pretty good, too. Let me pass that along.
He's like the date you bring along. No, I don't want to eat anything, and then ends up having everything on your plate.
Exactly.
We're going to be talking, obviously, Saints football also this hour. Zach Nagy, the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, will be joining us to preview a little bit of that South Alabama matchup as the Tigers have that game on Saturday and then head into the bye week. And then, man, oh, man, the real deal Holyfield starts after that with all the SEC action.
And you catch Ole Miss?
Right off the bat.
Take the over on that game. I don't know what it's going to be, but I know it'll be high. But, man, Ole Miss is putting up a ton of points, and they're rolling this year. I give Lane Kiffin a lot of credit. He's done a great job in getting into the portal and helping out the defense. And that front seven he's got defensively. And so they look like a different team this year. We knew they could always score points, but now they're pretty stout on the defensive side of the football, too.
Also taking your calls, obviously, on our Oakland Heart Jewelers Telk and text line, 504-260-1870. I know we got James hanging on the line. James, what you got for us on this glorious Thursday?
James, man.
Yeah.
Been a while.
You know, listen, man, I'm so disgusted losing that last week. But shout out to your guys, man. They came in and fought real hard and deserved the beatdown we took. But the Saints, we're 10-4 when Taysom plays against Atlanta. Can you guys hear me?
Yeah, we got you, James.
Okay, yeah. So we're 10-4 when Taysom plays against Atlanta. The thing that I think Atlanta's going to be focused on is simply that they've been 22% on third down, and. You know what it is. I kind of got an echo in the background because I got you online and I also got you on the radio version. So I'm kind of hearing myself right now. But anyways, I think what Cousins is going to try to do, and maybe Mike, you could talk about this briefly. They run a lot of dagger concepts, and so they're going to try to get McCloud and Mooney involved to get that short yardage thing going because basically they want to improve that third down percentage, and of course they're going to run the ball. Anybody would want to run the ball based on the way we played against the Eagles the week. But the thing that really concerns me is why don't we play Kool-Aid in place of Houghton? Here's another thing. You know, Cam Jordan has not had a sack since Matt Ryan's left. Against the Falcons. I mean, what's his stats right now? I mean, I know we all love Cam, and, you know, it is what it is. You know, for the time is undefeated. We all know that. But the thing that I fear the most is, you know, Hudson, nobody can tell me that Hudson wouldn't have been one of the best coverage linebackers. We put him on the practice squad knowing he was going to get taken by somebody. And I want to see that Lalo's guy. I don't want to see the same thing happen to him. What's your guys' thoughts on that?
I think one of the things in this game to watch is because this is a copycat league, is what the Eagles got loose with Dallas Goedert, is the situation with Kyle Pitts. How are you going to match up against him? Goddard's a really good player, but he's not the athlete that Kyle Pitts is. And Kyle, you know, he's been kind of set back a little bit because of some injuries, but he's a nightmare kind of mismatch downfield if it's a safety or a linebacker. So that to me is a concern and effort. I think one of the things you'll see the Saints do a lot is blitz and try to get after him. Without their starting center and their right tackle, it's a spot where you got to shoot people right up the middle. And we've seen they've had success with that with Alante Taylor, who was back at practice today. So,
woo-hoo.
I think, you know, for Atlanta, they always going to try to run the football. That's their MO. If it's Bijan, if it's Tyler Algier, now they got Ray McCloud involved. That's first and foremost. They're going to try to run it. Who has really come through for them? We talked about this Monday. Man, Darnell Mooney from Tulane. He picked him up from the Bears.
Terry Fontenot knows something about them Tulane guys.
Yeah, and you know, he's sort of a big play guy for them. You know what Drake London can do. He's a huge target guy. Ooh. Worked that short intermediate area very, very well. And then you throw in Kyle Pitts. But you got to protect him. When you watch Kyle, you know, how Kirk Cousins is today, man, he's not real mobile. Never was, but he always had a little bit of a movement left and right. And you understand early on this season coming back off the Achilles, Kansas City, they sort of late in the game got in his face. They were fortunate that a couple one-pass interference wasn't called. They got about three of them called on them. But, man, Kirk Cousins can throw the football. If you give him time, you got to affect Kirk Cousins, and that's with pressure up the middle. But first and foremost against Atlanta, stop the run. Make sure Tyler Allgeier, Bijan Robinson don't control the tempo of this game.
Like you mentioned right there, Mike, I loved when Deuce was on with you yesterday saying with Kirk Cousins, he would throw the kitchen sink at him in this game.
I would throw it at him a lot. You know, you can't do it all the time because see a seasoned veteran like that, if you're going to blitz him all the time, he's going to figure it out, and he's going to pick you a couple of spots. But I would blitz him a lot, especially on third down situations, to get in his face and affect that throw. But they are a heavy run team. They want to run the football. And so if you got to throw everything on Cousins to make play after play, then you can get after him a little bit more. So for the Saints defense, hey, listen, this isn't a real difficult formula. Saints offensively, you got to run the football better, and you got to stop the run because that's when you can put pressure on Kirk Cousins.
You look at the tight end position, obviously a concern after we saw what Dallas Goedert did last game, and then also no DeMario Davis right now practicing with a hamstring issue, so it becomes even extra concerning, I think, that position.
Yeah, and, you know, the one thing with Pitts, he's difficult on one-on-one spots because of his athletic skills.
Yeah.
His speed, you know, can't duplicate that in practice. You don't have somebody on this Saints team that can run like what Kyle Pitts can. And the problem is Kyle has been being able to stay healthy, which he hasn't been able to do for a long length of time. And we'll talk a lot more about this in the 6 o'clock hour when we have the Orlando Ledbetter come on with us, talk about the Falcons. But, man, they got some weapons there. It's going to be which one of the two teams can block. Because you're missing two starters, basically, from both squads along that offensive line. Who has the better depth? And I do believe if Landon Young is healthy, he's going to be one of the starters at guard.
Looking at this, Mike, as we go into break, Atlanta a 2.5-point favorite going into this matchup. So, basically, a coin flip. Even the odds makers think so.
Yeah, what they do is giving you home field advantage.
Exactly.
Into that. But that over and under it was 42.5.
Yeah.
What is it? It's still 42.5?
Yes,
now,
sir.
Has stayed sort of steady because I think it was 43 Monday when I first came in.
Feeling like an underdog.
And then it was 42.5 by the time we finished the show. So it feels like sort of an under game, and so you know what happens then. It becomes an over game.
We're going to take a break. When we get back, we're going to get into some LSU football, talking Tigers with Zach Nagy of Sports Illustrated. Stay tuned right after this at the Treasure Chest Casino here on WWL. Welcome back into Sports Talk here at the Game Bar and Grill inside the lovely Treasure Chest Casino. We'll be here every Thursday. Want to stop by, say hey. We're at 4540 Williams Boulevard in Kennebra. Now helping to welcome in Zach Nagy, the publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated, to the Radio Huddle. And Zach, how you been doing, man?
Doing good on this end. Doing good on this end. How about yourself?
We're doing great here. You know, obviously another big matchup for this LSU team taking on a tough South Alabama squad before the bye week. What are the biggest keys you think you need to see from this LSU team before they get a break and get into the nitty-gritty, the meat of the SEC schedule?
Yeah, look, for me, it's all about playing complimentary football and playing four quarters. We haven't really seen LSU play a full four quarters of fantastic football so far this year. It's been sporadic. We've seen them come out on the first drive of the game and execute on all cylinders. And then in the second half, we've also seen them do that. But in the first half specifically, It's just been in spurts. For me, in order for this program to kind of reach that next level, it's about playing four quarters of football, coming out the gates hot, carrying that into the first and second quarter, going into halftime, regrouping, and then carrying it into the second half as well. Look, we can classify this team as a second-half team right now, but in order to kind of succeed, let's say, in the SEC, it's about playing four quarters of football, both complementary and every other direction of the game. So that's what I need to see from this team, and I'm hoping we can see that this Saturday in Death Valley.
Zach, one of the things we've seen the emergence of over the past few weeks, and I know you and I have talked about him, Aaron Anderson, that wide receiver. We're looking for that guy who will be that number two player at wide receiver until Chris Hilton is able to come back. The good news is, looks as though Chris will be ready to go Saturday night in Tiger Stadium against South Alabama. But your thoughts on the growth of Aaron Anderson? You see a much more confident player. You know, him catching the football. And no one ever contested how well he could run with the football after the catch. He always has that skill set. But it's his route running skills and getting into and out of a cut and a break so much quicker than we saw a year ago, and his confidence in catching the football.
Yeah, Mike, I think he's really kind of hitting his stride here. And we talked about needing that wide receiver, too, to step in and kind of emerge and take the pressure off of Kyren Lacy. I think he's doing just that. And statistically, he's kind of proving to be kind of your most productive receiver right now. Obviously, Kyren Lacy is a guy who can take it to the next level and become this elite-level talent. And Aaron Anderson is coming in here and being very complimentary to what we need for him to do in Baton Rouge. And look, it's a guy who's finally healthy. He's dealt with knee injuries. He's dealt with other injuries. And now we're seeing what he's capable of when he's 100%. And right now, look, he's doing everything that you need him to do. He's taking the pressure off of guys like Kyren Lacy. He's opening up different dimensions of the game. You can get it to him in the open field, and he can turn it upfield for a chunk yard play. He can get downfield and catch an intermediate route as well. So, look, he's leading the team in yards per catch. He's doing a lot of things that you want from your wide receiver, too. Obviously, things will change once Chris Hilton's back in the fold and eventually gets healthy. You can't expect him to come out and kind of come out clicking on all cylinders his first game back. It's going to take time, and Brian Kelly's alluded to that. But when referencing Aaron Anderson and Aaron Anderson only, this is a guy who's unlocking different elements to the offense, and it's been a really, really nice spot to see him in.
The other guy on the defensive side, the football, and I talked to Pete Jenkins last night about it, and it was funny, before the season started, he brought up two names. He said, I think Savion's in for a big year. He's playing the right position. And he said, Mike, watch Braden Swenson. He's got a chance maybe to really piece this together. And Pete actually coached or helped mentor him when he was at Oregon, because Pete works with the Oregon Ducks defensive line and linebackers. And your thoughts on Braden? And, man, he's having a great season so far for LSU.
Yeah, I think Braden's making himself a lot of money this year right now. I mean, he's piecing together a strong start. And, again, it's just about consistency for this program. And he's been one just incredibly consistent piece of that defensive line. And for me, all along, going into this season, it was going to be about how productive your edge rushers were going to be. We've seen Savion Jones and Braden Swenson take a lot of the pressure off of that interior, where you and I have talked on several occasions. Look, the lack of depth is an issue, but as long as your guys on the outside can take pressure off of them, they can be productive, serviceable pieces. And we've kind of seen that over the last couple of weeks. But when highlighting Braden Swenson as a whole, man, he is putting together, and it's just a sensational year. He's number two in the SEC in sacks. He got two forced fumbles. This is a guy who's been productive, and I don't really see him slowing down, Mike. This is a guy who I think is going to carry it into SEC play and really do everything you need from him in order to kind of make this defense as serviceable as they can be.
Zach, a look back, you know, I mean, it's always tough to lose a guy like Harold Perkins, because sometimes when he's not making a play, offensively, you want to know where he's at.
Right.
And you're trying to scheme to make sure he doesn't make the big play. And it opens up other things. And even Braden has brought that up. It's opened up things for him. It's opened up things for Savion. But if they go to the three linebacker sets, kind of explain everybody how that mix would be and how it would look. Certainly the Weeks brothers, it looks as though they got two of the three spots. But how would it look like for the Mike and also in the Sam linebacker position?
Yeah, look, I'm really intrigued to see how defensive coordinator Blake Baker kind of works this thing out. And like you alluded to, look, Harold Perkins is a fantastic football player. He can change the trajectory of the game in the blink of an eye. This is a guy who offensive coordinators and offenses as a whole have to keep tabs on before the snap, during the snap, during the play, you name it. All eyes have to be on number seven. Now, obviously, you lose that kind of key defensive playmaker. And look, box score doesn't tell the story for a guy like Perkins. He can do a lot of things that might not show up in that category. And now you kind of switch over to life without Perkins. And what's that going to look like? I mean, for me, you just worked as a 4-3 defense. You had Whit Weeks alongside Perkins and Greg Penn. For me, look, moving forward, I'd really like to see them go back to that 4-2-5 defense. I think that's something that Blake Baker and the defense are going to have to work with. That's four defensive linemen, two linebackers, and five defensive backs. Insert Major Burns at that star role and work from there. Look, Mike, I'm sure we're going to see a lot of different looks this weekend. You're playing against an inferior opponent where you should have the opportunity to test different things prior to SEC play. But for me, I'd really like to see them utilize that 4-2, 4-2-5 defense, get with weak significant snaps, and move on from there. A guy that you could see take the field on a couple of different plays is going to be Xavier Atkins, true freshman linebacker. He's a guy who they're going to look to activate if need be. That way you have four serviceable linebackers in Greg Penn, the Weeks brothers, and then insert Xavier Atkins as well. They've been really high on what he's doing off the field, on the field, and they could see him becoming a key piece to what they do down the line. I'd be very, very much expecting to see him see the field this weekend.
Zach, how much meat on the bone is Xavier Atkins?
I like what Xavier Atkins brings to the table here. This is a guy who's got nice size. He's been living in the weight room. He finished his last season of high school football in Texas. He's originally a Louisiana native. He's sitting over there around 200, 215. He's got some nice physique, Mike. I think this is a guy who could continue to hit the weight room more, put on size. But long-term, this is a player that Blake Baker and the rest of this defensive staff are very much looking forward to seeing what he can do.
You did a long interview with a guy that I think as we get into the SEC play, I think will emerge more and more, and that's Tre'Davious Green. Because one thing, even when he's covered, he's open. I mean, you know, when you're 6'7" and a half, there ain't no 6'7" and a half defensive back or linebacker covering you downfield. And your thoughts on them maybe – because we've seen so much of Mason Taylor, and he's such a tremendous football player. But with Pimpton and also with Green, their emergence more as the season goes on, because we know Brian Kelly wants to use more of the two tight end and maybe even three tight end sets.
Yeah, Tre'Davious Green is the guy who's a class act. He's a fantastic player to sit down with and talk it over with, talk ball with. But look, at the end of the day, Mike, this is a player who's only played two seasons of football. He played his 10th and 11th grade year, had to sit out his senior year due to eligibility and stuff. He played that last year as well. For me, when I'm looking at a guy like Tre'Davious, he has all the intangibles to become that up-next great tight end out of LSU. I'm really excited to see what he can do long-term. Like you said, he's a red zone threat just waiting to kind of burst on the scene. We've seen him get in the end zone already this year on a short route. But look, like you said, he's a 6'7", 245-pound monster. He has a basketball background that allows him to utilize that vertical. You can go up and get it. Same thing goes for Kamori and Pimpton. So moving into SEC play, I'd love to see them utilize him as red zone threats. These are guys who are just waiting and kind of itching to get on the field, itching to make plays. We know what Mason Taylor can do in that tight end room. This is a guy who is just an incredible talent. I call him Mr. Reliable, Mr. Consistent. Obviously, he's rewriting the record books in Baton Rouge. Mason Taylor's a guy who can teach those two young guys how to become up next, teach them what it takes to become a great tight end at LSU. And when I look at a guy like Tre'Davious Green, I don't think there's a ceiling on what he can do. 6'7", 245, can go up and get it, be a talented receiving threat, utilize him in the red zone. I'd love to see him get in the end zone this weekend just to boost his confidence going into SEC play. We've already seen them do that with a youngster in Kyle Parker. I'd like to see them do that with Tre'Davious Green as well.
Zach, I don't know if you got a horse in the race or not, but give me your thoughts. Alabama, Georgia this weekend.
Yeah, it's a tricky, tricky game. I'm a big fan of what Georgia can do. Obviously, we saw them struggle against Kentucky, and that made me scratch my head a little bit, just knowing kind of how Kentucky struggled against South Carolina. We saw how that game went. And then now we look at a team like Alabama, who's in year one under DeBoer. I'm really intrigued to see what they can do. I'd love to see Alabama kind of come out there and take that game over. Obviously, I'm a Louisiana native, so that's going to get a lot of people kind of, you know, not necessarily agreeing with that take. But look, I'd love to see Kalen DeBoer and that Alabama Crimson Tide team go and get a big win over Georgia. They're creating a dynasty over there in Athens, and I'd love to see kind of these two programs who have built up so much history go at it. And I'd like to see Kalen and his crew go out and get a big-time win.
Man, Milroe, you talk about big games for the quarterbacks. Carson Beck at Georgia and then Jalen. And getting to know Carson and Jalen at the Manning camps. Man, boy, it was so funny. Bill Belichick is there. Okay, he don't come to Manning. So I think he's looking for a job, so to speak, for next year. The first guy he went to talk to, Jalen Milroe. Second guy, Carson Beck. Bing. 1-2.
Jalen Milroe is a class act, man. That's a guy who's just a fantastic interview, fantastic person, fantastic player. Looking at a quarterback battle that's going to have all eyes on it, wouldn't be surprised if all 32 NFL teams sent a scout out there to go and kind of watch what's going on over there in that game. But Carson Beck's a guy who's a fantastic game manager, can make the big-time play when need be over there for Georgia. It's going to be a big-time matchup. All eyes are going to be on it. I can't wait to see how it goes down. For me, I'd like to see the Crimson Tide come out and get a win, but who knows what's going to happen in this one.
Talking to Zach Nagy, publisher of LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. Back to this matchup with South Alabama, Zach. You have the Major Applewhite coming back to Baton Rouge, has really downplayed his, you know, coming back to his hometown. But I think obviously he's going to have this Jags team really jacked up for this game. What can we expect from South Alabama in this matchup against LSU?
Yeah, South Alabama's got a lot of juice on offense. They got Gio Lopez, who's a fantastic, dynamic quarterback, can utilize his legs to extend the play. And we've seen him do that on numerous occasions in this year. He's a true freshman quarterback. He's still young on the scene. But he can do a lot of things with his legs, and he can utilize his receivers, specifically Jamal Pritchett. That's his top guy. And I'm looking forward to seeing how that kind of duo works out against the defensive back room in Baton Rouge. That's kind of struggled a little bit. But they're bread and butter on the end. This is a program who can really, really get after it in their rushing attack. And it starts with Fluff Bothwell. Believe it or not, that's his actual name. And this is a guy who's really, really getting after it. He averages over 9 yards a carry. The South Alabama offensive line has given him opportunity after opportunity to really take advantage of his opportunities. So I'm looking forward to see the challenge this weekend. I do believe that LSU's defensive line will be put to the test against a super talented team. But at the end of the day, I think LSU's going to come out and get this win.
Last question for you, Zach. Your thoughts on the development of Cade Durham at running back? And everybody got an opinion. Sometimes I think we got to get him new TVs. But, you know, we talked a couple weeks back about how fast he was. So we had a couple texts. Man, he don't look that fast to me. You saw that pass out in the flat. And those UCLA guys thought they had a bead on him and an angle. And he just outran him to the end zone. More and more confidence each week in Caden Durham. And I know we'll always be running back by committee. With Brian Kelly, and so we'll see with Caleb Jackson and Josh Williams. But, man, Caden Durham is making a statement here, not only as a runner, but also as a receiver coming out of the backfield.
Yeah, Mike, he's a speedster. I mean, this is a guy who didn't enroll early in January because he wanted to finish his last year of track with Duncanville. He's an uber-talented player who has the ball in his hands. Look, he's quick, he's twitchy, he's fast, he's athletic. You name it, that's Caden Durham. I've been really excited about the opportunities that he's been presented so far. Obviously, everybody in the world wants to see him become that lead back and take over. But there's so many elements to being a successful running back in the SEC, whether it's pass protection, et cetera. And that's Josh Williams' bread and butter. But for me, heading into this weekend, I'd love to see Caden Durham get in the end zone. I talked about it before with Tre'Davious Green, kind of getting that juice, kind of getting that momentum shift, carrying that in SEC play. I'd like to see that happen with Caden Durham as well. He's a guy who's super athletic. We've seen him succeed against South Carolina in an SEC game already. Let's get him in the end zone again. Give him double-digit touches, and I think it's all it's going to do is boost his confidence moving forward. Fantastic player. I'm excited to see what he can do for the rest of the season.
Zach, always great insights from you. Appreciate the time. Be talking to you soon. Be sure to check out all his great work, folks. LSU Tigers on Sports Illustrated. Zach Nagy, appreciate the time, and you can follow him at ZNagy20 on Twitter or X, whatever you want to call it. Appreciate the time, Zach.
Thank you, Zach.
Thank you, guys. You have a good one. Stay in touch.
All right.
Going to take a break. We'll be back with more of Sports Talk after this. Stay tuned. We're at the Treasure Chest Casino. I want to hear you stop by at the Game Bar and Grill right inside at 4540 Williams Boulevard in Kenna. We'll be right back here on Sports Talk on WWL after this. Back inside the Game Bar and Grill for the Treasure Chest Casino here at 4540 Williams Boulevard in Kenna. We're getting ready for Thursday night football. The New York Giants and Dallas Cowboys about to kick it off. You can place your bets at the FanDuel Sportsbook right here at the Treasure Chest Casino. Also, make your bets for game days in the NFL, college action going on also this weekend. We're going to get into our triple option feature, guys. We're talking about some of the top stories in sports right now, and I want to give a shout out to the Pelicans. Made an announcement today about some promotions and additions to the team's coaching staff and basketball operations department. Swin Cash, one of the great ladies in our sport, promoted to senior vice president of basketball operations. Congratulations to her. Also, Rohan Ramadas has been elevated to senior director of analytics and innovation for the Pel. But, man, oh, man, just to have a lady like that around this organization and Swin Cash, a big positive for the Pelicans. And, like I said, congratulations to her and the team.
Yeah, no question about it. Charlie, I'm going to throw it to you because I know you got to tell me about the Astros, right?
You know, I am actually going to focus on the AL wild card pitcher right now, guys, because it is my Astros is the three seed right now. Steve's Yankees, I believe, still hold the top spot in the AL as well. The Guardians kind of clinching that first round bye. So the Astros aren't going to get a first round bye. We'll have to play in the wild card round. But who are they going to face? And I think it's actually kind of interesting. I'm keeping up with it right now. The Tigers, the Royals, and the Twins are all fighting for a wild card spot. The Orioles have already clinched, and right now they're the four seed, which means the Astros wouldn't have to face them. In all likelihood, they are going to be the four seed. But it's a matter of who's going to be the five and the six, because, you know, ever since the MLB expanded that kind of playoff format to include six teams making it, it changed up a few things. So right now the Tigers hold the five seed and the Royals hold the five seed and the Tigers hold the six seed, but who they're playing at the end of the season matters, right? Detroit has a three-game set against the lowly Chicago White Sox, who've already hit that 120 loss mark. I know I've kind of brought that up a couple times in the past. But then the Royals are playing the Atlanta Braves. If you're looking at the NL wild card pitcher, guys, a couple teams are going to be fighting for a playoff spot. The Mets, the Diamondbacks, and the Braves are all basically a game apart, fighting for two spots. So the Braves have something to play for. The White Sox, I don't think they do. So if you're looking at how things are going to shape up a little bit, all those Astros fans out there, I would anticipate, now this isn't putting anything in stone, I would anticipate the Astros playing the Royals in the wild card round of the playoffs, whereas the Tigers are going to get that five seed if they can take care of business against a terrible White Sox team and face the Baltimore Orioles in the wild card round.
Charlie, it's a question I'm going to ask you for triple option, and I thought you saw sort of a class act when Alex Bregman, which could have been his last game, regular season game, in Houston last night. And what do you think will happen there with Bregman, and who would replace Alex? They can, man, that's a big bat to lose out of the lineup with Bregman. So where would the Astros go with there? Because I've had a couple people ask me that today, and you kind of see that they're setting the stage that, you know, this is sort of the end of the trail for Bregman.
So, yes, that's kind of what it's seeming like. I know if you ask Jose Altuve, you know, what he thinks about it, he's fully anticipating for Alex Bregman to be back for the foreseeable future. But as far as a guy that's kind of in the minor leagues that they're ready to bring up potentially next year, Bryce Matthews is their top prospect, a former guy that they drafted out of the University of Nebraska a couple years ago. I think it was in 2023, correct. So he could be an option there. He's an infielder to potentially move over to third base there because they just really don't have anyone else. If you're asking me personally, I would love to see them bring Alex Bregman back. He's been a huge kind of, like, he's been Mr. Consistent, right? He's not the flashiest player in the world, but he's a guy that's going to hit 260 with a good amount of home runs, a good amount of RBI production, run totals. He plays a lot. He plays really good defense at third base. If you're asking me, I would love to see the Astros bring him back. But you know what it comes down to, Mike, in every situation when it comes to these contracts is the money aspect, is how much he's looking for, especially for an aging player. So if the Astros can figure out something with Bregman, I think that both sides are still interested in him coming back. I think that, you know, standing ovation that the Astros fans gave him for potentially his last regular season game in Minute Maid Park is just kind of a just in case if he does, in fact, leave. But, I mean, he's already cemented himself as a Houston legend in my book.
Because you sort of felt, you know, that moment that this was, hey, guys, this is it.
Right, exactly. You know, tip of the cap.
Yeah, tip of the cap. This is sort of it for me here. And so, man, the one thing the Astros have done really well. And their farm system has been able to get some top talent out of it. So, man, that's a big loss, though, if it's the final moments for Bregman with Houston.
Want to bring up to you guys. Sorry, I want to bring up to you guys real quick, seeing for Thursday night football action tonight in Giants Stadium, Malik Nabers warming up, has a shirt on that says Discipline, Attitude, Will, Grit. You got to love it out of this.
Well,
dude,
he got all of it.
Right, exactly.
He got all of it. This was a guy that LSU, he was not on the top list for them. They had a young man from Texas that they had a commitment from. And he decommitted. He went to another Texas school. Didn't really work out for him well. And at the last minute, Coach O and company, they go down there and re-recruit Malik to come to LSU. Because he had verbally committed to Mississippi State. That's where he was going to go. And they get him in the bewitching hours right before signing time.
Coach O, the closer.
And Malik was, man, I didn't know for a while because – they sort of sideswiped me a little bit, but he said, then, you know, I figured at the end it was my best shot. Always sort of grew up an LSU fan, wanted to play in Tiger Stadium.
That's awesome.
I got that opportunity, and so, man, it's worked out for Malik pretty well.
We're going to take a break. That wraps up our triple option feature. We're getting ready to close out the 5 o'clock hour. In the 6 p.m. segment, we'll get into some Atlanta Falcons talk, do some spying for the Saints. Atlanta Journal-Constitution Falcons beat writer D. Orlando Ledbetter, good friend of the program, will join us, breaking down those Dirty Birds for ahead of Sunday's big matchup in the Mercedes-Benz Stadium in the ATL. That's a noon start right here on WWL, Saints Radio, and, of course, the Odyssey app. We'll be back right after this break at the Treasure Chest Casino in Kenner on WWL after this. Closing out the 5 o'clock hour of sports talk here. Want to remind all Tiger fans out there, Saturday, LSU's taking on South Alabama in Death Valley. Coverage will be starting at 2 o'clock. Mike Dettillier, Herb Tyler.
What?
For
you
the
sure
Gulf
about that?
Coast Bank and Trust Tiger Tailgate Show. That's what it says in front of me here.
All
so
right,
you got to be
right
there.
Yeah, yeah.
At the Acme Hoister House in Baton Rouge. Some pretty good eatings over there, too.
Yeah, man, Acme's awesome, and we just a little over a mile away from Tiger Stadium, so come on by and visit with Herb and I. We'll be at Acme Oyster House from 2 to 4:45.
Coming back with more after this.